Thank you. Thank you for giving me opportunity to give this talk. I hope it will be a relaxing experience for you. This is rather somehow explicit and not technical mathematics, which probably I should spend more time about this. This is a joint work with Didier Dacunto. Actually, left mathematics for, but I hope that only for some time. In fact, it's a kind of development of his PhD thesis, which is still unpublished in his major parts, even it is already cited and used the ideas in other papers. I will start with description of what we call epsilon ridges and valley lines. This is a concept which already was mentioned by Adam in his talk about this gradient conjecture for minimal functions. We will consider at least C2 function, real C2 function with U, which is an open subset in Rn. You may think also on U as a Riemannian manifold. Okay? We consider that this Rn is equipped with standard Euclidean structure. We have a gradient of this function, and we define, we associate to phi, to F function phi, which is on Rn, has values in R+, and it is defined as a simply infimum of the norm of the gradient at points taken from the level T. Okay? We put infinity if the fiber is empty. Okay? Norm, yes, of course. Yes. Okay? Now we will speak about typical points. What is the typical point? C0 in R is typical if and only if this function phi is bigger than some constant, positive constant for T close to T0. Okay? These are the notion of typical points. The other points will be called asymptotic critical. No, this is a typical value, in fact. Typical value. Asymptotic critical value is, well, what we can take. We can take the image of U closure. Maybe other points are called other points in the closure are called asymptotic critical values. values of alpha, and we denoted by Kf. Okay. So, of course, all standard critical values belong to Kf. So, contains all these are critical values of f. But in general, of course, this contains. So in general, of course, this set is bigger. So now, what will be this epsilon Ridge Valley set? So we define we fix some epsilon, but this epsilon is actually bigger or equal than zero, not maybe zero somehow. No, in this contour. Okay. We in fact consider two cases, bigger than zero equals zero. So this is the set of points where the gradient, norm of the gradient of f at point x is nearly equal to infimum, so which is smaller than 1 plus epsilon times phi of fx. Okay? And so this is this epsilon Ridge Valley set by the definition. Note that if for epsilon bigger than zero, we have the following, that a point in the image, that means here is typical, in other words, it's typical. Well, if and only if the intersection of the with the level is non-empty. For epsilon positive. Okay. So these are these definitions. So, well, I would maybe try to give you an idea of this set. It is a bit misleading that this is a Ridge and Valley set. So you can think about our obviously escalier, our how do you say in French, in English, escalier? Stairs. We look on our stairs. Okay, so though this is multivalent function, but one can consider also this concept for multivalent function. So this this epsilon Ridge and Valley set will correspond to the outside boundary of this stars somehow. So they do not have really a simple interpretation in the general case, but we'll see later that in fact they correspond to some valleys and ridges. Okay. So no, my goal is now to state this principle of comparison of lines which lie in this epsilon Ridge set with the length of gradient trajectories of f. Okay. So I will consider now a curve in this epsilon Valley Ridge set with the properties like follows. So this is a curve. So this is a Dat moet curve. Well, in fact, with finitely many components connected components and points eventually. For some, let's say, aesthetic reason, we can add some isolated points. So I would like that this if I take a typical a value, then the level which corresponds to this typical level meets our curve at one point. Point and transversally. Well, when I say transversally, we may have, of course, some number of exceptions. Yes, and we will assume also that this KF is finite. We will assume that KF is finite. Well, this is somehow to make things easier, even because one can also consider a discrete set or something like that. Okay. So I will call such a curve an epsilon Talweg. So the curve is an epsilon Talweg of F. Then we should be careful, and we should not forget that the definition of already of the function psi and this epsilon valley rich and valley set depends on u. So it depends when we change u, it will change almost everything in this setting. But well, once u is fixed, it makes sense to speak about such a set. So what does it mean geometrically? That we have some more or less open set we can think about or with non-empty interior, this epsilon valley. So this is, and inside we have a curve. For instance, like that, okay? And we may think that function is just the height function, okay? So this function is, this epsilon Talweg is not necessarily a connected set. We may have some isolated points, okay? So in this region, okay, this we have here some U, perhaps. This is U. So in this region, the gradient is weak. That means that the distance between the levels is relatively small. Okay. And now I will try to explain you how this epsilon Talweg can be used to estimate the length of gradient trajectories. So theorem. It's capital T. So let X be a curve which is a trajectory of the gradient. I use T but one as a parameter here. So in this formulation, somehow I consider that it is the maximal possible trajectory. And I will explain later what, how we can interpret it. Then the length of this trajectory is bounded by the length 1 plus epsilon length of this epsilon talweg of f. Okay. So this is the main statement. So, for instance, you should think in the following way. So you take, for instance, two levels. And you have a trajectory between, gradient trajectory of between these two levels, say, so this is xt, and somewhere you have this gradient, this epsilon talweg, so you can estimate the length of this this trajectory, this curve, by the length of this curve. Okay, and it is, so this estimate is independent of the trajectory. It depends on the only on the level. Of course, it depends somehow also on the on u. Right? U maybe much bigger. In fact, you can also do the following. You can go to some intermediate level, for instance, and then you switch. You jump to another point, and you continue. You start following gradient from this point. And again, when you sum all these two, the length, it will be bounded by the length of this. In fact, it can maybe even like this. Okay, so this is the main observation. And now it was used, for instance, to show that when you have a family of definable functions on some, let's say, fixed bounded set, definable family of the of definable C2 functions, and we consider this problem of the bounding length, then we can find an uniform bound, which is independent on the function. In particular, for a polynomial, when you fix the degree of polynomials in a ball, you may find a uniform bound. And this bound cannot be derived from the Wojaciewicz inequality. Well, after, of course, we have refined this construction. So for the polynomials, we have obtained much more precise results about the length of the trajectories, that they have some, when we have a ball of the radius r, then for a polynomial, any polynomial when you of fixed degree in n variables, then the trajectory which is inside this ball of radius, well, say one, the length of this trajectory is bounded by some constant depending on number of variables and some d power n minus 1. Remember well. So this was some old, there were some old results in this direction, but in fact, when we submitted the paper, the referees suggested that we should try to work in a more general setting, also for, say, smooth functions. So, what I would like to explain you somehow goes to a different direction, in the sense that we can to some extent apply the method which was used in this minimal or algebraic setting in a general smooth case. Because, so, but to do this, we first must somehow define more precisely this epsilon region valley. Okay, so let me speak now about this Thalweg lines and gradient critical lines. Somehow assume that we take epsilon equal zero. So now the set which corresponds to this is a set of points such that gradient norm of the gradient at point x is minimal globally on the fiber. Well, now with this definition, there is a problem because in some cases, when we consider in a bounded region, so it's possible that there are no points. So that's why this is more convenient to use with this epsilon. But for instance, around some critical points where the gradient will vanish, then we may hope to have this set non-empty. And in fact, we can also consider now what I denote gamma 0 f is the set of points where we have local minima of the gradient. Local minimum on the fiber. So then, of course, it contains this the reason. And this set, when we want to describe this set, then we can of course replace norm of the gradient by square of the norm of the gradient. It will give the same points. And this set is easier to describe because now we can use Lagrange multiplier to determine this set. So, but in fact, when you apply this Lagrange method, you determine rather critical points. And then, because when you want to find just minima or local minima, then you have to work harder. So we will rather consider the set of the points where gradient, the differential of the square of the norm of the gradient is collinear with differential of f. Okay, and so this will be this the set which appears in the title. So this is the gradient. In the title officially was extremal, but I believe better say the gradient critical set. And this set is, of course, some closed set in U, and it has when f is a polynomial, so we have it will be an algebraic set. And of course, it contains all this local minima. I think I put this one. I don't know why, but it's so gamma 1 f contains. So when we want to apply this comparison principle, of course, when in most cases these estimates are more or less asymptotic, so we can replace the length of this gamma epsilon f by the length of theta 1 f. Of course, when this is a curve, because first of all, it should be a curve. So in general, it's no reason that this is, and it is not a curve in general. You take about the distance function f as a distance to the origin, then of course levels are circles, and on each circle gradient is of the same length. So in general this is not a curve, but you will see that in the general case it is the case. Well, this is another issue. Yes, yes, it is another issue. Yes. So I should make it more precise. So first, I will recall you that when you compute the gradient of the norm of the gradient, then we have a very nice formula. Which is that 2 times Hessian of F applied to X Hessian applied to the gradient. So now you see the definition in the definition of this gradient critical set, we may write simply that theta 1, f, are the points from u such that gradient is an eigenvalue, eigenvector of the Hessian. Okay. So this is very, very nice, nice relation, and very, very useful. So how to describe this? Because my goal is somehow to give the description of this gradient critical set for a generic function, generic in the sense of Whitney topology. So of course I should use this technology of René Thom, and to do this we should introduce an incidence variety. So what is incidence variety? These are the couples of vectors and symmetric matrix. So well, I will denote S n, like these are the symmetric matrices. And such that there exists lambda, such that H applied to V is lambda V. Of course, written as in this way, you don't see that this is an algebraic set, but you can check that this is an algebraic set. And now. We can introduce Gauss-Hess map. So what is Gauss-Hess map? It's a map simply which associates to X. So the Fx is a gradient and Hessian matrix. So it goes to this product. And now this gradient critical set is an inverse image of sigma by Gauss-Hess map. That's on the head. And somehow this generic structure of theta 1 is hidden and can be recovered from the structure of sigma. And I haven't met in literature this good description of this set. And in fact, what I will need a stratification of this set. So there is a following surprisingly simple stratification. So I will consider matrices with simple and non-zero eigenvalues. So Sn there are Nn symmetric matrices. Sn star, these are symmetric matrices with simple and non-zero eigenvalues. Eigenvalues. Okay. So let me write this strata. So I will have sigma zero. Sigma zero is just zero times Sn. Sigma zero star is zero times Sn star. And the most important, sigma one, which is sigma minus sigma zero. Okay. So now I will state this theorem about the stratification of this of the space of the couples matrix and the vector and matrix. First of all, sigma is, this already we have seen, but it's algebraic of codimension n minus 1. Okay. Sigma 0 minus sigma 1. Sigma zero star is algebraic of codimension n plus one, and the most surprising is that sigma one is non-singular. And the fourth is that when we consider sigma 1, so sigma 1 is a big stratum, the big stratum. Along sigma 1 along sigma 0 star, then this is satisfied with the big condition. So in fact it's analytically trivial. So satisfied with me the condition. So I will now try to give you proof.
Sigma 1 is just the product of a line and Sn minus 1. Is that sigma is a column or?
Sigma 1 is except zeros, except zero vector.
Yeah. If it is not zero, then it's just a column. Your sigma is a column. And
yes.
For each fixed v, h is just in the orthogonal space to v is any form, and that's sigma. So your sigma 1 is the product of the line and Sn minus 1, where Sn minus 1 is the space of
No, but this is true for, this is, no, it's much more complicated, in fact. So sigma 1 are all points of sigma, but those, except those where vector v is 0.
Yeah. Form. That means a symmetric form is has very simple form. In the orthogonal space, it's an arbitrary form, and there is an eigenvector. That's it. So it's a very simple. Okay.
Maybe you're right, but I could I couldn't see this way. First of all, let me say some few simple remarks. This 2 is trivial, more or less. So 2, what is the 2?
The space of all forms with a given eigenvector is a vector space.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but I say that this is a smooth stratum. So why when I move vectors here if I have Sn here, yeah, so here I have so I fix a matrix, yeah, for a fixed matrix I have the here this eigenvector, yes,
therefore we fix those 0 v,
yes.
All matrices form a vector space.
Yeah,
and your sigma 1 is exactly
the product.
The union of all those vector spaces all on 0. That's why it's smooth, it has a very nice structure. It has all kinds of structure.
Uh-huh. So what if for a fixed, it is a... For fixed V...
All H form a vector space.
No, but I change V or so.
Okay, now
you change me. But this vibration is...
You have your stratum is just a product of a vector space, which is Sn minus 1, by all, by Rn minus 0, which is all on 0.
Mm-hmm.
There is also an extra eigenvector.
Maybe you are right, yes. I looked in this way that I have matrix, and then the problem is that when I have multiple values, eigenvalues, the dimension. No, because we have natural projection of the space of matrices. And this is wrong.
When you fix V,
yes,
all the forms that have V as an eigenvector form a vector space.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, and then now and this parameterization is smooth.
Just a product of Rn minus 0 by vector.
Yeah. Okay, maybe you're right, but I will show a different proof. Okay. This 2 is quite easy because you see this. What is this? Sigma 0 minus. So this is a union of the you take a zero set of the discriminant to each matrix. We can associate a characteristic polynomial, and we can compute the discriminant. So this is a zero set of characteristic polynomial. and determinant. So yes. So this is of course of co-dimension one in an in the space of matrices. Okay, so this is trivial observation. Yes, and this well, my proof of one and three, in fact, because in of three. So I considered the map J, which associate to so we take matrix, we apply to a matrix to a vector a matrix, and then we take exterior product. So this is a map from Rn to Sn to the this power of Rn. And what one can prove that for the differential, so lemma, with this crucial lemma that which I didn't skip. Proof. So crucial lemma is that the rank, if V is non-zero, then the rank of this differential at V H of G is constant equal n minus one. So in other words, this G is of constant rank. On sigma 1. And of course, this sigma 1, or sigma, is just an inverse image of zero. Okay. So by the constant rank theorem, one can also prove this result. But perhaps you are right that there is a simpler. Okay. So in this way we prove this we prove three, and now now we know that the image. The codimension of sigma 1 is n minus 1, and what is left is this stratum which corresponds to V equals 0, and this is codimension n. So we have also proved that this codimension is n minus 1. Okay? Okay, so now we can apply, then we are left with 4. How to explain 4? Maybe I will introduce this notation. So, I will fix a matrix, let's say H0, which is in this space Sn star. So with a non simple eigenvalues. Okay, and it has simple eigenvalues and eigenvectors. So lambda 1, well, even we can order them because they are real. So eigenvalues and associated eigenvectors uh, Now, when we move this matrix, so in fact we can obtain analytic functions. So these eigenvalues and eigenvectors, of eigenvalues in the Krill way, we can choose them in analytic way, and because they are the roots of the polynomial which has no multiple roots. And this one, well, of course, the eigenvectors, we can also choose, unit, and we can choose them in analytic way. So they depend analytically of H. Okay, so when you have here, say, this one eigenvector, here another, and when you move, then you obtain some kind of. Maybe I should change the color. So this here is the picture of kind of vibration of lines. Okay, this is say for this one, and also you may obtain some orthogonal lines. This also kind of vibration. Okay, and so I will denote I. These are the what are these exactly? So these are the vectors omega is neighborhood of H0 in the space of matrices, and such that V, let's say, is collinear with this Ci of H. Okay. So, well, so here was one was say E1, and here was E2. So these are closed smooth manifold. Closed smooth manifold. Okay, and so, and now what you can see that the intersection of sigma with this Rn times omega is a union of this smooth manifold. Okay, and of course. Well, you see, because this eigenvector depends analytically on H, so it's clearly that we obtain analytically trivial structure along the space of Sn star. Okay.
Remind what Sn star is. I'm a little bit confused. What is Sn star?
The matrices with simple non-zero eigenvalues.
All eigenvalues
are, there are no multiple eigenvalues, and all eigenvalues are non-zero. Okay, so when you move here this along this. When you stay in this stratum, in a small neighborhood, using implicit function theorem, you find dependence which is analytic.
everybody gets all zero multiplied by all the forms which are multiple. I can buy this for zero, I can buy this for zero.
I don't consider them. They live in this stratum, which is called...
you want to get a certification?
Yeah, they are here. They are here. They are all hidden here. This corresponds actually to all matrices with multiple or with zero eigenvalues. And this is of course dimension n plus 1, so... So this the term stratification is maybe not appropriate, but this is what co-dimension n plus 1, so it doesn't matter.
So we don't care about it.
We don't need to care about it. Okay, so we have this, and now I can say this is the main theorem, which explains the structure of this gradient critical sense. Theorem assume that the F is transverse to the strata of the stratification. And well, here maybe I assume that F is C2, it's infinity function. Of course we have that F is a Morse function, is Morse, and so has only isolated critical points. I denote this set CF. So this is set CF. So this critical set except critical points is infinity smooth manifold of dimension equal 1 or empty, of course, if there are no. Now I for any critical point X, which is a critical point, there is a neighborhood such that in this neighborhood the critical set is a union of n curves and then these curves are closed in UX of dimension 1, of course, connected, we can say also connected, okay. And also we can say something about tangents. So tangent to at x to si is li, where li is an eigenspace of the Hessian at x. Okay. Okay, so this is the statement. So the picture is of course obvious. We have Hessian. So Hessian has, say, two eigen spaces, and this is L2, S2. I may say also another one, which is this one. Okay, so the only critical point for this generic case are the critical points of F itself. Okay, so this was surprising for me, because I thought that there is a possible that, for instance, there is some intersection. Because now, of course, this is a local picture. Now they continue, and this is very mysterious. How they can continue? Let's say one of these. We have two eigenvalues. So now we have in this situation our gradient will have essentially one minimum, one maximum. Gradient on the levels will have minimum close to the critical points, so the set is non-empty. Now it continues, and in which way it continues? It's still very mysterious for me. For instance, whether In fact, there were studies which I will show you some picture of, which was taken from a study of this gradient critical sets by chemists. In theoretical chemistry, they want to understand the path from one local minimum to another local minimum for a potential, and the question is to find in some reasonable way a path between these two points. My hope was that these pelvic lines can be used to do this. But in fact, the situation is more complicated than I expected. So, either one should consider not only minima and maxima, but also some critical points for the norm of the gradient, or completely in a different way to attack this problem. Also, you see, this construction maybe can be done on surface, on smooth manifolds, compact manifolds. For instance, when you have a torus, okay, you take high function, so you should have this gradient extremal, gradient critical points. While I never really honestly did all this computation, but it looks that they look like these two circles, and of course also you have this one. Okay. When you start here, it seems that this corresponds to the minimum of gradient, and this to the maximum. But when you arrive here, necessarily you have a change of the type of the extremal point. So I believe that this should correspond to some crossing of some more stratas which can be, we can make this stratification finer, in fact, to distinguish simple and multiple eigenvalues. So this should correspond to some either change of sign or that two eigenvalues became the same. I know that Damon, Jim Damon, he studied this type of questions, and I still believe that there is some opportunity to understand better topology of the space, starting from using this curves, this smooth smooth curves which they appear in this construction. Okay. So maybe in the end I would just want to show you this picture. So this is a warming up. So you see this, you have, I don't know if you can see this, you have explicitly a polynomial of degree 3. This is polynomial of degree 3. And then, and this, there are two saddle points. Okay, and from the saddle points you see these branches of this critical set. But curiously, this one, on this one, the function is not increasing, it's not monotone. You see? And this is quite surprising behavior of this gradient critical set with respect to its own potential somehow. So I must confess that still this I do not understand. But just to the end, somehow the story. So when we have this theorem about the transversality, so transversality is a generic condition because we have this Whitney stratification. So the space of the function which are transversal is open dense in infinity Whitney topology. So that's why we can say that this is a generic situation for infinity function, and also with this first part of the talk, we can somehow compare the length of gradient trajectories, which are here, for instance, here. We can compare them with the length of this talvex. So the idea of this work is that we can extend the result from a minimal or algebraic category to the case of smooth category. Okay, that's all. Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm.